the talk radio revolution.
John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens.
This is an old Geechee in Arkansas who attacked us. Listen to what this old Geechee said about us.
How can the two stuck kittens not be aware of dictionary existence? Frank and John, right perspective. Queens, Staten Island, New York, New York, New York.
This is the right perspective. The right perspective.
Dictionarily.
You got to learn how to disrespect your elders.
John of New York.
Frank and John of New York.
Oh, Sapphire. Sapphire.
They hoop about hoop.
They hoop.
Listen to that old Geechee. Dictionarily. I bet you this guy, when his back, lower back hurts, he says, I done hurts my sacro crackerjack.
They hoop about salutarin.
There's an emptiness in his life.
I knew there was an emptiness someplace.
Dictionary.
Do I look insane?
Now, here they are. John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens on The Right Perspective.
Perspective, and we're going to help you stay on the sunny side of life, because things certainly have gotten dark on Wall Street, haven't they? They've certainly gotten dark. It's presidential campaign, and we are here tonight to try to keep you on the sunny side of life from 10 until 11 p.m. Eastern, North, Great Salutrian Daylight Savings Time on the Two Friends Radio Network. Transmitting on 3.215 megahertz WWCR and broadcasting from the Rod Coppola Memorial Studio and Richard D. Henderson Two Friends Network broadcast production facilities here in the metropolitan New York area. And you can reach us to be on the sunny side at 718-761-9996. 718-761-9996. For whatever you'd like to speak about, and coming up at the 10:30 hour, our guest will be Webster Tarpley, author of the controversial books, The Unauthorized Biography of Barack Hussein Obama, and Obama, the Postmodern Coup. And returning to the microphones of The Right Perspective, hello! All Frico, and reporting from the Orange Free State, Leslie Forster, to speak about, as you know, the collapse of the ANC, the coming civil war. I predict a Boer Volksstaat within 5 years. And he'll be our guest after the midnight hour on Hello, All Frico. But first, as you know, today is the 10th, and Sunday is Columbus Day, and we say, Hail Columbus! Hail Columbus! Hail Columbus! Yes, we celebrate the founding, the rediscovery of Great Salutria, For mine has been a racial and historical evolution. Because we know that the great Salutrian Christopher Columbus was not searching for the riches of the Orient. He was not looking for a quicker route. Actually, deep within Columbus's veins flowed the blood of our great white Caucasian Salutrian ancestors. For what was driving him and Europe at that time was a rediscovery of great Salutria. So on October 12th, when he landed at San Salvador, Columbus was not proclaiming it for the Spanish King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. He was reaffirming the white Caucasian Salutrian people had, after 15,000 years, finally come home. They'd finally come home to Great Salutria, which had been stolen from them by the barbaric and savage Beringian race, which had taken it from them. So deep within Columbus's racial and folk memory was the pounding, throbbing story as his blood coursed through his veins. It was the blood of great Salutria within him. For was not Spain the home of the Salutrian people who came to this continent? And therefore, he was reclaiming it in the name of great Salutria. So we say, Hail Columbus, great admiral of the mighty Salutrian Ocean. Hail Columbus, you who sailed the seven seas. Hail Columbus, you came back to this land that once belonged to you and me. Hail Columbus, on that day your name shall surely live with great fame. Hail Columbus, never, sir, great admiral, shall we ever forget thy name. Hail Columbus. Yes, and you know, as Columbus came back to Great Salutria, as we took our natural dominance over this continent, as we wrestled it back from the Beringians who had stolen it from us, who had driven our people into slavery and death, the trace of the Salutrian people were there. Columbus knew this. Columbus had recorded stories of white tribes within Salutria. Yes, white tribes within the southern Salutrian continent, within the northern Salutrian continent. For these were the remnants of a once great and mighty people. I have dreamt a dream of great Salutria, and these Salutrian ancestors, whose descendants were few in number, were the last remnants of a great and mighty people whose land stretched from coast to coast. Do you realize on the vernal equinox and the summer solstice, great bonfires would stretch all across Salutria, from the great eastern Salutrian Sea to the great western Salutrian Sea, the Atlantic, which we now call the Atlantic and Pacific, but in those days was called the Great Eastern and Great Western Salutrian Sea. And from the mouth of the mighty St. Lawrence to the great Northwest, where our final ancestor, the Kennewick man's bones, were found, great and magnificent bonfires were lit to celebrate the summer and vernal equinox. Yes, the summer solstice. Fires were lit on the great plains and upon the peaks of the Rockies to the valleys of what we call California, so that when nightfall came upon Great Salutria, the entire continent was bathed in firelight, celebrating these natural occurrences. Yes, if we'd have taken satellite photos 20,000 years ago, all of Great Salutria was ablaze in celebration of these holidays. Christopher Columbus's coming here was the rediscovery of our civilization. This is how it began, the rediscovery. The Vikings had been here 500 years further earlier. They descended even to Maine and out into the Midwest of Minnesota. They sailed the Great Lakes, or as we call them, the Great Salutrian Lakes. And the remnants of these civilizations are there. For those in the South, they have what's called the Etowa, or mound builders, after the Etowah River. And, you know, I was reading this about it in Archaeology Magazine. Do you realize that here they wanted to dig into these mounds? But get this, John. The Varangians say they are sacred to us. Everything is sacred to these people except human life. Everything is sacred but human life.
It's like I said, the Middle East. Every city is a holy city.
And so they practice the most brutal and barbaric of human sacrifice. But the mounds are sacred to our people. Well, they're sacred to our...
idolatry.
Yes. Because beneath those mounds lie the remnants of Salutrian civilization. Salutrian civilizations were built upon by the arriving and invading Beringian hordes. And whether it is the cliff dwellers of New Mexico, whether it is the mound builders of the Mississippi Valley or the Ohio River Valley, these were all built upon the great Salutrian civilization. And we hail Columbus today because we know that without his rediscovery of Great Salutria, our history would have been taken from us. And, you know, I got to say this. You know, John, you know, I ever watch, you know that great line of Planet of the Apes when, like, Charlton Heston goes, how did apes evolve from men on this planet? Remember when he says that?
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
Let me tell you, in 4 years, that's what they're going to say if Obama wins. Future generations will say, how did they allow this? How did they allow themselves to be enslaved? Yep. How did they so easily give up that which was their country? How did they, that your great grandchildren, I mean, your children will look at you one day and question you and say, why did you allow them to steal our freedom? Why did you allow them to steal our country from us? Why did you stand aside so idly and allow this to happen? And it will happen. And it's happening now. It is happening now. It is a criminal institution, public enemy number one, the Ministry of Lies, otherwise known as the media, which is nothing more than a propaganda arm of the left, which want, you see, they think, because they are elitists, that somehow they are going to be immune. Remember what I told Pat Buchanan last year when he came on? This was like before the French Revolution. The aristocracy lived in a bubble. And they never, in fact, they dabbled in revolutionary politics. Because to them, it was chic. They never thought that it could actually come back to them. Well, they found out when the guillotines dropped upon their necks. And that's what's going to happen in the Ministry of Lies. They think they're immune. Just read the history of Stalin's purges, his terror, and find out what happened to those who were in the elites. That's what's going to happen to them, because they're handing over this country, and the American people are letting it being handed over. You think that this country was polarized under Clinton? Wait until this gets into the White House. Then you'll find out what polarization is. Because we are coming to a point in this country where I dare say we'll be on the... Well, we have a cultural civil war going on. And what is the next step? Unfortunately, that's what it is. Because the polarization, when this is shoved down people's throats, every time, as everything I predicted to you, if you remember, is coming true, and I said, they're all catching up now, of course, on talk radio with their big salaries, but they really have no insight. Now they're complaining that everything is being called racist when he's criticized. Look, anybody with half a brain knew this. All you had to do was see what was around you. Not the way you wanted to believe it would be. Not that you wanted some Pollyanna version of what you wanted it to be. but the hard, cold reality of the way it is. And they're going to use that to suppress, or try to, because eventually the American people will not allow it. See that song I played, Sunnyside? That comes from the great album, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, of Bluegrass. And that's when those are the real Americans. That's when America was America. That even during the Great Depression, they never gave up on this country. They never allowed this country to go the way of the dictatorships of Europe or Southern Seleucia. And that spirit is sleeping. It's still there. It's latent. It's dormant. But it's going to arise and awake. You see those film clips of him with those so-called youth and chanting his name? This guy is raising a private army. You have a scumbag like James Carville threatening riots. Hey, I don't live in ancient Rome where the mob ruled and the emperors gave in to the mob. Jefferson warned us of mobocracy, for he was a student of history, not a victim of history. And he studied the Roman Republic, and he knew about the mob and the danger of the mob. But he is counting on this, Obama. He is raising his own private army, and he is going to use that private army to threaten surreptitiously those who dare speak out. Mark my words. Anytime this guy is going to be, this little Mugabe is going to be contradicted or opposed, they're going to threaten riots. They're going to threaten the use of their private army that he's raising. He is a young, these are like the green bombers in communist-occupied Rhodesia. And that's what he's raising. Mark my words. Have no doubt about it. You know, if you watch Riley or read the book, Riley Ace of Spies, about the British Secret Service, the British Secret Service agent, Sidney Riley, there's a scene where Riley and Count Orlov, who joined the Bolsheviki, but like Trelissa and the rest of them, he just vanished in the Great Terror. He was what they called the old Bolsheviks. Well, he makes a line to Riley about how the Cheka was formed. And how did Lenin do it? In the words of Claudius's servant Pallas, I will tell you how he did it. He emptied out the prisons, and according to, in the words of Count Orlov, they are the worst nasties this side of hell. And any time Lenin wanted to get rid of someone in government, and Stalin did it, he used them, and it looked like an accident. Well, folks, you better watch yourself, because there's a coming horror to this country. His connections to fanatical, extreme leftists is being exposed. He is a believer in that. And now that we are on the verge of a coup, he will implement it. So once again, in the words of Charlton Heston, how did apes evolve from men on this planet? Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It's a man house! A man house!
And that's what we'll be saying.
That's right. And we're well on the way. I think James Carville said, if Obama looks like he's ahead by at least 5 points and he turns out that he loses,
yeah,
he said, in so many words, watch out. And you know what he means,
yeah,
by that. We have to live under the
threat. Of course.
Threat.
That's it. Mobocracy.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what I'm
yep.
saying. Mobocracy.
And it's really a shame what's going on, because you mentioned those kids. I don't know which ones you were talking about, the ones that were singing or the ones that were in the uniform.
Both.
Yeah. And they're in these uniforms. They look like Middle East thugs or something, and they're all jumping around with these idiotic hip-hop moves. Because of Obama, I was able to, I'll be able to become an astrologist.
Change
I'll be able
liquor.
To come to a doctor. Yeah. and they probably can't even read their own names. They're talking about becoming an astrologer or a doctor. Who are they kidding? They ought to try first becoming decent citizens. But to put people in uniforms to jump around like that and recite these idiotic phrases. Do people actually think that this is true because of Obama? What did Obama do for them? You never even met them. What the hell are you talking
about?
That's
the cult of personality.
Yeah. Who's he talking about? Because of him. What he'll do is just empty your pockets. That's what he's going to do. So, and you want to talk about what we're going to be up against. You're going to have people like this, folks, who are going to be even more emboldened with an Obama in the White House and all the thugs that are going to be invited there. Get this. America is a racist country? You're right, it is. It isn't white people, though. This is from the New York Post of last Sunday, October 5th. Bias in black and white. Apartment duo bullied. An interracial couple says they're the target of racist rants in their Harlem building. A superintendent, his assistant, and attendant are trying to drive the couple from their rent-stabilized apartment with racial taunts, physical threats, and blaring music, according to a lawsuit the couple filed last week. Diana Bush, 47, who is white, and Jason Clark, 39, who is black, moved into a tiny third-floor apartment at 426 St. Nicholas Avenue in 2002 during a wave of gentrification. In 2005, the building was sold to the current landlord, Charles Glasgow, and that's when they claimed the trouble started. Heat and hot water became a problem in the building, and when they complained, Glasgow allegedly became enraged. They say he conspired with Kelvin Lynch, the superintendent, to try to force them from the building. "White bitch, I'm going to kill you," someone screamed in a tape recording of one tirade recorded by the couple. They claim that the voice is that of Adrian Gibbs, an upstairs neighbor in the five-floor apartment building next to St. Nicholas Park. In another incident, the couple says that Lynch shouted, "We will make sure you move out. We run this building. We control this building. The African woman has rejected you. That's the only reason you're with that white woman," Clark said. Clark said that Lynch once spat in Bush's face. Now, these are people, folks, who say that if white people don't want to live with them, they're racists. So it's all right for blacks to come into a white neighborhood.
It's always the same.
But when whites try to move into a place like Harlem, then they want to get rid of them. And then at the same time, they're accusing whites of being racist all over the country.
Right.
But when they prove they're not by moving into black neighborhoods, well, they still want to get rid of them because they want everything to be under their control. Is that what little self-esteem they have, that if a few white people move in, somehow they're going to lose control of their neighborhood?
It's bigotry.
Yeah, but it's just plain bigotry. But nobody plays this up as black bigotry. What's this going to be called? Racial pride as well?
Oh.
If this happened in a white neighborhood where a black tried to move into a white neighborhood, the media would have been out there smothering this guy's lawn in front of his apartment building, trying to get a story out of it and show how racist white people are.
That's right.
And here's another beauty, folks. They're talking about taxes that are going to have to be raised here in New York City. Bloomberg, the guy who wants to steal a third term and change all the rules for him so he can run for a third term and get rid of term limits here, now that it's time for him to hit the road. And he wants to raise the real estate tax back up to 18%. 3 years ago, he raised it 18%. Then about a year ago, he lowered it 7%. So it was still 11% higher than it was 3 or 4 years ago. So now he wants to bring back the 7% increase, because New York City's losing money with the stock market falling and all that. Well, this is why your taxes have to be raised, and really why they shouldn't be raised, because there's plenty of money around. How many times have I told you that all you have to do is open up a newspaper on any given day and you find stories of everything being stolen, robbed from the city, and anything that's controlled by liberals? Now, the school system here is controlled by liberals, as is in most of the country. Well, get this. This is about the 1,000th story about the New York City school system. And they're always complaining they never have enough money, and we need more money for education. Yeah? You don't need a dime for education. The money should be cut back on education because everything's being stolen by the people who work for the Board of Education. Thefts bite schools, and bite is spelled B-Y-T-E, as in computer bytes. And employees suspected in laptop ripoffs. The school year is barely a month old, but more than 300 computers worth hundreds of thousands of dollars have already been stolen from the public schools around the city, law enforcement sources said. Laptop thefts have always been a problem for the Department of Education, but so far this fall, they've spiked 30% for unknown reasons. What do you mean, unknown reasons? Somebody wanted something for nothing. And it's the people who work in the Department of Education that have the opportunity to get into these schools. They're the ones that are stealing it, some unknown reasons. School employees, rather than students, are suspected in the thefts, which have hit around about 50 schools from elementary to high school. No kidding. Also, the law enforcement sources claimed principals are not held accountable for the thefts. They can simply go out and buy new ones, the sources said. So this is where your money's going, folks. This was strongly disputed by the department spokeswoman, who said the cost of buying new computers comes out of the individual school's budget. Well, who cares where it comes from? It's still stolen, right? Principals have to take it out of their budgets. So if they have to buy new computers, they have to sacrifice something else, she said. Schools don't have an infinite amount of money. Yeah, well, I don't have an infinite amount of money. And I'm tired of my tax money going to make up for losses. Tax increases, which should never occur in the first place, and not only should tax increases not occur, our taxes, if all of this thievery could be punished the way it is and stopped, our taxes could be eliminated, not just cut back. How many stories do we have to read every week about money being stolen from Medicaid and all these dentists? Remember the stories of the dentist filling 60 fillings in a half an hour, stealing the money from Medicaid? Last week, I read the story about the Long Island Railroad workers getting pensions that are supported by the government when they didn't deserve them, or they just retire and they go into the office and get a pension, or, you know, a disability pension when they weren't even hurt. That was last week's story. Every week it's a different story of your money being stolen. You've got to start writing to these politicians and tell them you want your taxes not only not to be raised, but cut back, and you're asking me why? Well, take a look at any newspaper around the country, and I'll guarantee you, you're finding government programs that are run by liberals robbing hundreds of millions of dollars. Not a couple of million. I'm talking hundreds of millions, maybe billions over the years, folks. Now, we're not talking peanuts here. Oh, by the way, Frank, you were telling me about Jimmy Carter. Wait till you hear this, folks.
Oh, yeah.
You think Jimmy Carter's still at it. And he has, we have to bring up that word again, an unembarrassability. Where did he go this time, Frank?
Belgium.
He went to Belgium.
Could you imagine this?
And George Bush's economic.
Could you imagine this?
Yeah, the guy of 21% interest rates, 9.5% unemployment, and 12.5% inflation.
Yeah, alternate days for getting gasoline. He's sick. He should have been brought back
in a
straitjacket.
He's sick. He's bitter. He really belongs in a home.
In a straitjacket. He belongs in a straitjacket. Perhaps he could get shock treatment and medication because he is really. And that is what a petty, vicious, little man he is. Could you imagine? Well, look, I mean, if you're going to put Obama in the White House, does it amaze you that the American people put Jimmy Carter in the White House? The American people must have like some masochistic streak in them. They are so goddamn stupid to think that this guy, this quote-unquote community organizer, is going to he's going to straighten things. Him? Yeah. You know, the American people are going to be, it's going to be like they're hit across the face, right between the eyes with a baseball bat.
By the way, community organizer means black radical leftist.
Extortionist. I will be right back with Webster Tarpley, author of Obama, The Postmodern Coup, and Barack Obama, The Unauthorized Biography.
We're taking your phone call. So if you've got questions or comments, then be heard on The Right Perspective.
The Right Perspective.
From across the USA and the rest of North America.
I was about to say, you have one clear choice. Then every other consideration is swept aside. I mean, all of you here tonight. Yes, you, brothers! I call you brothers and proudly acknowledge you as such. You will have a share of the happiness and prosperity that is waiting for us all. When the storm is over and the sun rises, that mighty sun, which will give us everything we need in life.
What sun are you talking about, friend?
I am talking of the greatest idea in history.
This is The Right Perspective, Frank of Queens, John of Staten Island, and you. And we have on the line our guest, Webster Topley. Now, tonight's guest hosts his own radio show on the GNC Radio Network and is the author of several controversial books. His latest, The Unauthorized Biography of Barack Hussein Obama and Obama, the Postmodern Coup, are available on Amazon.com. Here to explain his views on Barack Hussein Obama is Webster Topley. Welcome to The Right Perspective, Webster. I'm Frank of Queens.
And I'm John of Staten Island. Thanks for joining us, Webster.
Thank you, and I guess that makes me Webster of Flushing.
Yes. Let's. Your anti-Obama stance comes from a quote-unquote New Deal perspective. How do you explain this, being that Obama comes from the left?
I would classify Obama not as a leftist, but as a social fascist. In other words, he is not really a Democrat in any meaningful sense, except maybe the Jimmy Carter or Grover Cleveland variety. He is a completely artificial project. He's like Carter in the sense that he's a puppet of the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberger Group, and in particular, people like David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzezinski, George Soros, and Goldman Sachs and the rest of the Wall Street banking community. Periodically, if you remember 1976, we have these moments where there's a great possibility for a big Democratic Party victory. And in order to abort this, the financier community comes up with a puppet. They bring in typically an unknown outsider who is their creature, and using their networks and their money, they project him into the middle of the political fray, and since the Trilateral Rockefeller Bilderberg networks are so powerful, there's a good chance that this person is going to win. This is why, for example, the Democratic Party bosses around Howard Dean gave the nomination to Obama, even though Senator Clinton had won more votes, obviously, in the primaries and showed more support and more viability as a candidate, because this is Wall Street's candidate. So that makes Obama the candidate of Wall Street, and I just like to stress this, the aspect of fascism, because I think it is generally not very effective to say he's just another liberal. Well, if he's just another liberal, let's give him a chance, because, you know, we've had a right-wing administration that's been about as bad as it could be with war and depression now, and a lot of people would say, let's try a liberal. I think this is not what he is. He is a fascist in the classical sense. Got to remember, Mussolini was a revolutionary socialist, so formidable that he had been praised by Lenin. And the original fascist movement contained people who were radical trade unionists, disgruntled war veterans, artists, writers from the creative class, as well as these revolutionary socialist types like Mussolini himself. And what you see with Obama is the beginnings of the, let's say, a facsimile of a fascist mass movement. In other words, the fanatics, the cultists, the Kool-Aid drinkers, the people who want to go to a stadium and cheer for Obama, the Messiah, right, the anointed one, the perfect master, a charismatic leader with a cult following, which is not based on issues, but it's based on a personality cult, with these other aspects, right? The idea that Obama has the mystical power to go beyond partisan conflict or class struggle and get you into this realm where everybody is magically united by the beatific personality of Obama. All of these are typical fascist ideas. And in my book, Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, I go through about a dozen characteristics of fascist mass movements. And Obama has these. He's definitely on the map in terms of a modern equivalent of fascism. And I would finally add, it's not a coincidence. In the Obama the Postmodern Coup, I try to show that the U.S. intelligence agencies have developed a kind of a cookbook, which they've used in places like Ukraine for the Orange Revolution. They've used it in Georgia for the Roses Revolution. They've had lacking success in the Cedars Revolution in Lebanon, but they tried it there too. And it's basically a cookbook for a seizure of power by some kind of a telegenic demagogue. So you've got to have the demagogue. You need fake polling. Right now we're very much in the realm of fake polling to give you the idea that McCain, Palin are unpopular, which I don't think they are. I think they're actually more popular than Obama. But Newsweek poll says something completely different. You've also got to have media whores. You've got to have a whole corrupt media establishment that's sold out to the financiers and their candidates. And then this idea, the swarming adolescents, the rent-a-mob, the dupa-mob. This is the specialty of Obama, right? The stadium speech, the balcony speech, right? Hitler's Nuremberg speeches, things of this sort. And then this branding, right? The catchy slogan, the color, the symbol, hope, change, the seal that he had, all of these emblems and liturgies that, again, they harken right back to early fascism. So this is what I see in Obama, and they've done this for a purpose. Obama has a mission. There are basically two things. One is crushing austerity, sacrifice, and the destruction of the American standard of living, which most people could not imagine. And you see why. After $700 billion of bailout for these bankrupt Wall Street interests, it's clear somebody's going to pay for that. And that is going to be motivated by Obama, but under left cover. He's not going to say bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and the war on terror. No, no. He will say global warming, the polar bears, the starving Africans, and they'll have other motivations for austerity, sacrifice, and the destruction of the standard of living. Obama's a very effective strike breaker. He's a very effective enforcer of austerity. He showed it by getting the Black Caucus to vote for this $700 billion monstrous bailout package. The other aspect with Obama is, in terms of international affairs, the Brzezinski strategy says, time to de-emphasize the Middle East, time to forget about the Middle East, time to get a worldwide decision in terms of world domination. And really, there are only two contending centers. One would be Moscow and Putin and Russia, and the other one would be Beijing and China. And Brzezinski says, you've got to destroy them, and then you'll rule the world. You'll basically have a perspective of 100 years of U.S. and British world domination if you can just knock out Russia and knock out China. And I was predicting all year that the center of confrontation would shift out of the Middle East, that there would not be an attack on Iran, which Bush and Cheney had been threatening, but that the confrontation would move quickly towards Russia. And that's what you see with this Georgian attack on South Ossetia and killing a bunch of Russians in the process. So this is what Brzezinski's interested in. As part of this strategy, you've got to refurbish the public image of U.S. imperialism. You've got to give it a facelift, in other words. And this is what Obama accomplishes. McCain, could McCain get 200,000 German lemmings drooling and swooning in Berlin? No, but Obama can. And this is seen by the Wall Street people as a big advantage. The other thing they want Obama to do is kick the Chinese out of Africa. Go to places like Sudan, invade them under humanitarian pretext. Not the war on terror, not bin Laden, not al-Qaeda, but humanitarian concerns. The real goal is to kick the Chinese out, cut off their oil. Same thing in Zimbabwe. Overthrow Mugabe, kick out the Chinese. Kick out the Chinese everywhere. And in the middle of that, you have this Kenyan business with the Luo tribe and Odinga, right? This is Obama's cousin. The Obamas are a family from British intelligence. As I write in the biography of Barack Hussein Obama, his grandfather was a servant to Lord Delamere, who was the absolute top dog of British imperialism in Kenya, in the same way that Cecil Rhodes was the dominant figure in South Africa. We have Lord Delamere in Kenya, and that's who the Obama family works for. So this guy Odinga is obviously an Anglo-American intelligence asset, but his strategy for kicking the Chinese out is to make alliances with the Muslims, with the Muslim fundamentalists in these countries. Remember that the Luo tribe allows you to destabilize Kenya, Tanzania, Congo, Uganda, and one other country there in the area, which is escaping me. But it basically allows you to take a whole chunk, a huge chunk of Africa, and destabilize it just through the agitation.
Well, let me ask. Well, first of all,
Obama has a perfect ability to do this.
Well,
why he is overwhelmingly the candidate of Wall Street.
Well, first of all, when you talk about fascism, what you brought up. And the cult of personality, I think it really applies to Kim Jong-il, the late unlamented Ceausescu, the so-called genius of the Carpathians, Kim Il-jung, the father of the dear leader. He was another one, the great leader. Stalin was the king of the cult of personality. The cult of personality runs throughout the left. The Bolsheviks established it with Lenin, whose mummified corpse lays in the monument there outside the Kremlin. So he is definitely more in the line of a Kim Jong-il, the dear leader, than of everybody else. Now, as far as Robert Mugabe goes, that son of a bitch should have been arrested when he got off of the plane in New York City for his crimes against humanity. We've interviewed farmers from communist-occupied Rhodesia, and believe me, it's not about getting to China. He is nothing more. Robert Mugabe is nothing more. It's nothing to do with British imperialism or British intelligence because they gave the country up. They stabbed the Rhodesians in the back. They were fighting a stalemated war. The fact is that Robert Mugabe has just become another village strongman. He has the green bombers, which is similar to what Obama's doing it with these kids that he's got running around chanting his name. He's brutalized the country. He's turned the country literally into a toilet. Do you realize there are more multi-billionaires in communist-occupied Rhodesia than any country in the world because of the insane inflation? I applaud getting Robert Mugabe out because Robert Mugabe should have never been let in the first place.
Well, then Obama's your man. I would suggest that rather than going afield into the details of this analysis, we should focus on stopping Obama, because that's what I'm into. I'm into arguments that are going to be effective to stop Obama. It is, I think, not a good idea to be so concerned with this left-wing, right-wing stuff that you get the, in other words, fascism, what is it? Is fascism right-wing? No, fascism is left-wing, especially in the beginning. Yeah. Look at the young Mussolini again, a revolutionary socialist. Look at the fact that Hitler wanted the word socialist into the name of the party.
Yeah, and they were called... when they supported the German rail workers' strike in Berlin, they were called Brown Bolsheviks.
Yes, and there's a significant revolving door between the two. But when you look at Obama, what's the most effective? I think we should discuss from the point of view of what's the most effective way to alert people to the danger of Obama? To say that he's a liberal or to say that he's a fascist?
I say
fascist.
Yes, I believe that because he is. He's extreme. This is I agree. This is a coup. And what I'd like you to do, please, Webster, is explain why you call it a postmodern coup and explain what postmodernism is. Because we hear that phrase all the time, postmodern. There was a book out that Hitler was the first postmodern leader. You know, could you elaborate on that?
Well, it's a trendy analysis which prevails in academic circles, and I guess you could say it's a combination of Nietzsche and existentialism, and this is what Obama represents himself. In other words, people have alleged that Obama is a Marxist. I mean, certainly Obama has significant Marxist influences on him. He's got this guy Frank Marshall Davis.
We did a show on
who was a homosexual black poet who happened to be a member of the Communist Party USA, but at a very low level, I would say, of Marxism. In other words, the Communist Party was interesting in pandering to what would later be called black nationalism, and they were not interested in Marxism if they could get some of these people recruited. But this is obviously the case. Obama's mother had communist sympathies, but I think even more, she was a Rousseauvian. In other words, she was a kind of a Margaret Mead, an anthropologist. She thought primitive peoples were better, that the more primitive the society, the better it was. So basically a rejection of civilization.
Right, the noble savage. It
didn't prevent Obama's mother from going to work for the State Department, USAID, the World Bank, and above all, the Ford Foundation. And I think this is the critical influence on Obama's life. He is, I think the best definition is a poverty pimp from the Ford Foundation or from the Gamaliel Foundation or the Joyce Foundation or the Woods Fund or the Annenberg Foundation. He's always been working for foundations. That's the family business. And what do these foundations do? They are not charitable institutions. Many people have this idea that they do schools or libraries or hospitals or things like this. They do nothing of the kind. They do social engineering. I would say the high point of foundation engineering was the New York City school strike of 1968. And what Obama was doing in the Chicago Annenberg Challenge was a similar exercise, playing the black parents against the teachers' union and, if necessary, against the city government. In other words, using suffering people as dupes and as a political commodity to advance his own career, but also to get the work of the foundations done. The foundations are interested in fragmentation, divide and conquer. I would say Alinsky is the same story.
Right.
Alinsky is not a socialist or a communist. He's a strike breaker. And this, I think, gives you an idea of Obama. He's an operative for the foundations, and his stock in trade is divide and conquer.
He
says that he's a unifying figure, but he's the opposite.
Yeah, well, this is what the left has always been about. They're never concerned about people. They use people for their political advantage and under the phony guise of the noble cause. But I wanted to go back to a couple of things that you said a little earlier, Webster. You said Obama is the candidate of Wall Street. Wall Street is about making money, okay, and that's a good thing. Why the heck would Wall Street want an ultra-left-wing Marxist socialist, and as far as I'm concerned, communist, and to me there's no such thing as a low-level Marxist. If you have any tendency towards Marxism at all, you're a Marxist, you're a socialist. You're just a Marxist, plain old Marxist, there's no low-level. You are one. Why would Wall Street want someone like that who is only going to be a hindrance to making profits?
Well, the fact is they do. That Goldman Sachs is the number one bundler for Barky Hussein Obama. They give him about five times what they give McCain, and that extends throughout the entire investment banking community. Take George Soros.
My question is why? Why would they want to help a guy who's going to be bad for business? They're saying that one of the reasons that Wall Street is having a hard time now, along with all the other problems, is that they're also worried that Obama was going to be elected.
Yes, that may be, although I don't think that's the main thing. And I don't think we can really discuss the causes of the worldwide financial panic and descent into a depression. I think it's something like this. Periodically, as in the case of Carter, they want to have an austerity enforcer, a strike breaker, somebody who can impose austerity and do it with left cover. This was Carter. Carter talked about the energy crisis. He talked about the malaise, the moral equivalent of war, and all the rest of this nonsense. Now, in effect, this is why they need Obama. If you had a nationwide general strike, suppose people said, we're sick of Wall Street, we want to go out on strike, we're shutting everything down, we're going to have a real mass movement. The ability of somebody like Bush or McCain to break a nationwide general strike is almost zero, because these people are now hated, they're reviled, they're discredited. But Obama is a new face. Obama gives a facelift also to what you would call the domestic counterinsurgency operations. In other words, he can say, your strike is an attack on me, and therefore you're racists, and therefore I'm urging, he could mobilize groups in the population to act as scabs and strikebreakers for him.
Well, I don't know.
He can also...
I don't know anybody who's saying they're tired of Wall Street. I mean, people have 50%.
Sure they are.
50%.
I don't know where you live.
No, no, wait. Yeah, but 50% of the American people are invested in Wall Street with 401ks and everything. So they may be upset at what's going on at Wall Street, but they're not tired of it. You know, people.
I think there's a hatred against. I think this would also be a miscalculation. In other words, if the McCain side bases its calculations on the idea that there's not an unprecedented wave of mass hatred against people like Fold of Lehman Brothers and against the Golden Parachutes and everything else, I think that would be a tragic mistake. Indeed, I think McCain could have won the election with a single vote. If McCain had voted against this monstrous bailout, he would now be on his way to the presidency with really no problems, because that would have allowed Obama to vote for it, McCain to vote against it, and about two-thirds of the American people are absolutely against that bailout.
Well, then why aren't they just as angry at Obama? He voted for it. And another thing you said...
Yeah, because it's because of this blurred image that the plan, of course, comes from Bush, the plan comes from Paulson, the plan is somehow associated with the Republican administration. There is, of course, a tremendous malfeasance of Bush and Paulson in this. These are Republicans. And, of course, McCain had a ready-made opportunity because he had the 150 Republican members of the House of Representatives. Yeah. He could have gone and rebuilt the Republican Party in a much better and more populist form.
Well, Webster,
but he decided not to do it. I think he threw the election away at that point.
I blame it more on the media, who has made this a Republican scandal. It's more of a it is a Democrat scandal. This Democrats, in fact, the only ones who spoke out against the problems with Fannie Mae and all that were Republicans. The Republicans are very pathetic in dealing and protecting and defending themselves. The media have turned this, just because there's a Republican president, they've turned this into a Republican scandal. This is a Democrat scandal. And I've got...
Well, I don't know how far you're going to get with that. Here's what I would say. If you get President Obama, Speaker Pelosi, and Leader Harry Reid, that is the fascist corporate state.
Well, we know that.
Under that regime, Soros will get everything he wants.
And what does he want?
Will get everything they want.
And what do they want?
Austerity. They want to crush your living standard. You can see this coming out of every ruling class.
And why?
Organ.
And it's, why do they want
time to cut the standard of living?
Why?
Time to use less.
Why?
Time to tighten the belt.
Why?
To pay for the bailouts, because this first bailout is only the beginning. This is nothing. $700 billion is probably enough to bankrupt the United States.
Yeah.
But that's about 5 minutes of derivatives, because that's the nature of the crisis. What is in crisis is $1 quadrillion of derivatives, which are the most toxic and destructive forms of financial paper that have ever been devised.
One thing's for sure, they were given to us by
Alan Greenspan, by the way, with the help of Clinton, to be sure.
Well, all right, beyond the
Bob
rhetoric.
From Citibank.
Webster, beyond the rhetoric, explain what derivatives are to those who may be...
Derivatives, what you're seeing is a crisis of derivatives. This is not really a subprime mortgage crisis.
And what are derivatives?
These are paper based on paper. So options, futures, indices, all the combinations of that, and then even worse, the over-the-counter derivatives, things like mortgage-backed securities. That's mortgages bundled together with a derivative pasted on top. The SIBs, the structured investment vehicles, the collateralized debt obligations, and the credit default swaps. We just had an auction today of the credit default swaps of Lehman Brothers, who have gone bankrupt. The credit default swaps were supposed to be insurance against bankruptcy, but they end up driving everybody into bankruptcy. So Wall Street is going to need more and more trillions. There is no end to this. Derivatives are a black hole, a bottomless pit. They cannot be bailed out. This goes far beyond some little penny ante business with subprime mortgages. And again, some people would say that the derivatives are more than $1 quadrillion, more than 1,000 trillion, and actually approach 1.5 quadrillion. Remember that the gross national product of the United States is a mere $15 trillion. Chase Manhattan, J.P. Morgan Chase, a year ago had $93 trillion of derivatives of certain categories, meaning six times the gross national product of the United States. It's simply impossible to bail this out, but they will try.
Well, is that there's actually
the exterminating angel of that austerity.
Well, there's actually a theory that the United States government in the long run may actually make money on this. So there goes that theory.
No. I think these are these are not going to pan out. Because the problem is this. If they were getting properties that people could live in, that would be one thing. That was the, you can compare it to the savings and loan bailout. In that case, the government got a hold of commercial real estate, in other words, tangible physical things that people need to live in. The problem this time around is you're not getting mortgages, you're getting derivatives based on the mortgages. That's why they're toxic. That's why nobody wants to buy them. If you could buy up properties, that'd be one thing. That would be fine, right, in principle. But that's not what it is, and you got to read the fine print. Whenever they say instruments, that means derivatives, and people know derivatives from the long-term capital management crisis of 10 years ago. Anyway, the goal of Obama is to put a left-wing face, a left-wing, extreme demagogic face on these austerity needs. And again, he'll say, right, you're going to be taxed for the polar bears, for this global warming, right, idiocy,
crap, yeah,
and we're going to have a solidarity fund for African development,
right, and
all the money will go to David Rockefeller, Soros, Goldman Sachs, Paulson, and the rest of these thieves in Wall Street.
One thing's for sure. These people who want austerity will not have austerity for themselves.
Right.
They'll be living high on the hog while they're telling you to, quote, sacrifice,
you know, let me tell you,
unquote.
Webster, I mean, I read his op-ed piece in the Times, I think it was back in February, and I realized from reading it how, first of all, he talks about how we waste a cruise liner, throws out so much food that could feed Africa. It was right there. His Mein Kampf was printed right there. Yet,
right,
what accounts for the stupidity? I mean, Webster, the stupidity of the American people. I mean, who is this guy? We've had programs on. Nobody knows anything about him. He was just picked and plucked and preened. And it's frightening, Webster, to think, because they will try to destroy the Constitution. Hold it right there, Webster. We're going to hold you over. That's Webster Tarpley, author of Obama, the Postmodern Coup, and the unauthorized biography of Barack Hussein Obama. You have a quote, John?
Yes, I do.
All right.
And I hope Obama's listening. The quote is from the great Winston Churchill, who said, "For a nation to try and tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to pull himself up by the handle." Thank you! Out for the whale wolves in Washington.
Yeah, and you know, the news guy sent us that file because we had a very deep and interesting conversation about Paul Newman, and the Color of Money came up, and the topic of the Balabush Gapool cue, and I explained to news guy the pool cue I had, I thought was a Balabushka, turned out to be a Joss West. It looks like a Balabushka because Joss West worked for Balabushka, but Balabushka wouldn't teach him all of his tricks of the trade. And if you watch The Color of Money, if you don't know what a Balabushka is, you'll find out about it. So, I love that Werewolf of London, and that's in The Color of Money with Tom Cruise and Paul Newman. What a great flick. That was better. That was the sequel to The Hustler. But it was better than The Hustler. Yeah. And
that's very unusual for sequels.
Yeah, and it was always.
Although the Omen Part 2,
yes,
was an excellent movie.
Yeah.
Both the 1 and 2, two of the best movies I've ever seen. Really, Really, really good movies. They really picked up on the second part. It was really good.
Let's go back to Webster. Topley, author of the unauthorized biography of Barack Hussein Obama. He has his own radio show on the GNC radio network. And also he's the author of Obama, the Postmodern Coup. And they're available on Amazon.com. And, you know, I would say this to you, Webster. I agree with you on A, part company with you on B, but I am willing to compromise with you on C through Z.
Well, Webster,
what I think we need what amounts to an anti-fascist united front, and you've got to focus on stopping Obama. And again, Obama plus Pelosi plus Reid would be, I'm afraid, the fascist corporate state.
Well, you know, let me tell you this. When the Democrats came back in power in Congress 2 years ago, what we heard from the Ministry of Lies, that's what I call the media, the Ministry of Lies, they were waxing orgasmic, saying, well, this is great. You know, you need a pluralism in government. You shouldn't have one party running everything. Have you heard them say one thing about that? No, they were orgasmic at the thought of having all three branches of government being run by the Democrats. So the fix is in with the Ministry of Lies.
Yep. Pelosi has a Soros representative in her office who runs her. Obama is a co-production, as they say. My argument is his basic matrix is the world of the foundations. Social engineering, divide and conquer. Use black unemployed for strike breaking against unions, this kind of stuff. This is the world of Obama and these little Gamaliel, Woods, Joyce, and those three are all satellites of the Ford Foundation. And they are past masters in the idea of organizing people on a very narrow basis and then using them to maintain the fragmentation and impotence of the population. I should also remind people, Fanon, if you want to know the doctrine that Obama really believes in, Frantz Fanon
was
this doctor from Algeria in the 50s and 60s, and he wrote about the necessity for purgative violence, that colonialism had to be ended with a bloodbath. And this then leads into the thinking of the Weathermen, of Ayers and Dorn. I have a big chapter about Ayers and Dorn. Who are Ayers and Dorn? They are foundation-funded terrorists. I have sources from the time that say the Weathermen were founded with a grant from the Ford Foundation and from the Office of Economic Opportunity. In other words, people who wanted to destroy the peace movement and destroy the student movement used the terrorist Ayers and Dorn as agents, as provocateurs, as wreckers, to make sure that that Students for a Democratic Society was destroyed. And that's what they did. So this is Obama. He's not Martin Luther King. He's the anti-Martin Luther King. He represents the deployments of the foundations to destroy what King stood for. And he himself, I believe, is a kind of Nietzschean existentialist and anti-Western thinker. In other words, he thinks Western civilization is radically evil and that the more primitive societies, this is what he got from his mother, are better. He also has the view of the anthropologist. In other words, he looks at the United States as ethnographic material. He says, how can I manipulate them? I'm a cool, detached manipulator of the American voter. How can I dupe them so I can seize power and then flay them alive? I think this has something to do with his choice. Rockefeller and Brzezinski and Volcker had Carter. Carter was basically an obedient puppet. He did what they wanted. He tried to get as much austerity, as much sacrifice, as much transfer of wealth into the banks as possible. But Carter had these religious scruples because of Christianity and so forth. Obama has no such scruples. This is hatred of the American people, a hatred of especially the American blue-collar working class, which is the Weatherman doctrine. The Weathermen preached race war. They said the only hope for the United States is to have a massacre, a race war of unimaginable proportions, and what will come out of that will be purged of the collective guilt of colonialism and racism and so forth. That is what Bill Ayers wrote about when he was a weatherman. That is why they did the bombing, and that is, I believe, this is basically what Obama believes. I think he is, you could call him a crypto weatherman. You're going to be putting a weatherman in the White House to carry out the old weatherman program of making the white, blue-collar working class suffer. You see this maybe more in the speeches of Michelle Obama. A lot of people have not heard these. The basic staple of her speech was, broken souls. In the United States, you would say our souls are broken. The only one who can heal our souls is Obama, Barkey, and in order for him to do this, we're going to have sacrifice, and sacrifice will allow us to get where we want to go.
Yeah, well, that's the line. The left always uses that line of sacrifice. First of all, as far as I'm concerned, Martin Luther King wasn't much better than some of these radicals you're
that's
talking
right.
about. And, you know, we've got to watch how we fall into the trap of the left. Before you used a phrase, we had a right-wing administration with war and depression. That's falling right into the trap of the left. First of all, George Bush
I think that's what we have.
No, or George Bush is not.
I told you guys, I'm a leftist. That's what I am. I'm a New Dealer.
Okay, well, we can't all be perfect.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, well, let me finish. Hold on. Warren, Webster.
The question is, what's going to be effective to stop
now,
Obama?
Webster, let me finish my point. George Bush is no right winger. That's why a lot of his base is very angry at him. A lot of people were wondering what the heck he with all the spending and everything. That's more like a Democrat. And secondly, a right winger with war and depression. First of all, we're not in a depression, and we had a tremendous economy in this country for 5.5 years to 6 years under George Bush because of the tax cuts that the left and the Democrats opposed. It's not a war. In Iraq, we are not in a war. We're in a battle in the war on terror. And this war, this so-called war, should have been fought by the leftist Bill Clinton, who ignored 5 attacks on this country over in his 8 years in the administration. Thank God we had a president who finally did something about attacks on this country with these Islamomaniacs, and we finally said enough is enough. And unfortunately, because Bill Clinton didn't do the job he wanted because he was too much of a coward and always worried more about his approval rating than doing anything that might turn out to be controversial, George Bush got stuck with it. But it's totally been forgotten that we had 48 straight months of job growth in this country under George Bush. We had I don't know how many quarters of growth in this country, tremendous growth. And a tremendous manufacturing and 6 million new jobs created because of those tax cuts. And everyone's forgotten that. This is not a George Bush economy. This is a Democrat economy. The housing problem was caused by their pandering to minorities with all of these loans that they shouldn't have gotten. And they're the ones who refuse to let us drill for our own resources off the coast of California, off the coast of Florida, in the Gulf of Mexico. They destroyed the nuclear power industry in this country. They won't let us drill in Anwar. It's only been Republicans who have tried to bring up the question of bringing to the floor a vote on drilling in Anwar. And if we were independent as far as energy goes, we wouldn't have this high inflation right now at the supermarket and high gasoline prices, which is another reason why the American people are angry. And all of this is liberal and Democrat induced. They caused these problems.
Well, let me say the following. A lot of that I would not be able to agree with, but let's pick out something more.
Why not?
Since I think
anything I said untrue?
Let me focus on one thing that you've got that is effective. The question about drilling and energy. Obama represents the most extreme ecological austerity.
That's true.
There's this speech where he says, you will not be able to eat as much as you want.
We're talking about North Korea. We're talking about a government that's going to mandate, I predict this, they will mandate portion sizes in restaurants. This is insane because, Webster, as we know, food has always been a tool of the Bolsheviki. Look, 10 million Ukrainians starved to death. Kim Jong-il starved to death. 3 million people. Pol Pot starved to death. It has always been a weapon of the...
Let me just go through this a little bit, though. He says, you will not be able to eat as much as you want. You will not be able to have an SUV.
Yeah.
And you will not be able to have your thermostat where you want. Now, where did he get that? I was able to find that straight out of a book by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Really?
The co-founder of the Trilateral Commission.
Ah.
The great friend of David Rockefeller. And a political servant of this Rockefeller, Bilderberger, Trilateral, Rand Corporation group. The Skull and Bones group comes in. The Chicago School. They're all in it. So Obama's speeches come out of this book. It's called Second Chance by Zbigniew Brzezinski. I think it's, if you want to call him a Bolshevik, you better make clear he's a Bolshevik from J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs, because that's who sent him. And without their money and without their networks, he would still be Barky Who, in the same way that Carter was Ginny Who. You could make a case that communist agitators are often provocateurs sent out by bankers, right? You can make that,
well,
you can
Parvis,
make that case going back.
Wasn't Parvis Alexander Helfand?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Permanent revolution.
The revolution and highlight the role of Kuhn Loeb or the British or whoever you want, if you understand it that way. But most people don't have that sophistication. So therefore, rather than say he's a communist, again, I think it's more effective to say he's a fascist and he is the harbinger of an austerity
beyond the same
belief, which will then be enforced by these myrmidons that he has. In other words, he's got a Green Corps, he's got a domestic anti-terror corps, a security corps. In other words, what he's talking about is building up a fascist mass movement in a kind of a paramilitary or quasi-governmental form, which would be the same thing that Mussolini had or the other fascists of the interwar period.
Well,
I think that's really scary.
Well, the thing, the American people will save us from this because they will not put up with that
for long. But Webster, we want to thank you. We want to end on a positive note of agreement. We want to thank you very much. Let us repeat your books and where people can get them. The Unauthorized Biography of Barack Hussein Obama and Obama, the Postmodern Coup. They're available on Amazon.com. He has his own radio show on the GNC radio network.
It's actually GCN. That's
GCN,
Genesis
sorry.
Communications
right.
Network.
And when is it on? When is it on?
It's you can hear it anytime on demand. You go to GCNlive.com. You look at the on demand section. You go to the bottom of the page. There, my show is World Crisis Radio. You can hear it anytime. The new program comes on every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern.
All right, thank you.
And you can listen to The Right Perspective from our website, The Right Perspective.
And we want to thank you and hope to talk
thank
to you.
Thank you. I'm very interested in your stuff. And again, what we need is an anti-fascist united front that goes all the way from you guys to me. To stop Obama. That's
well,
the overriding thing in this election.
What
we
need,
let's
condense it into a bumper sticker. What we need is an anti-left agenda.
Obama. Let's stop Obama now because we're going to regret it.
I would say anti-fascist is going to be effective. Anti-left, you're going to lose about 60%.
All right. Thank you very much, Webster. We appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye.
I know what he's saying there.
Yeah. And, I'm sorry I didn't answer George the Atheist's question. If he should... go cash, go gold, or put it in the mattress. So I don't know if he'd give any investment advice, but you know, the only thing is he skirted around the fact that the left under the Bolsheviks used food, and I'll tell you, they have. And this guy, this is frightening. You imagine he said all of this, John,
about what
you could drive, what you could eat. You know,
Frank, you said in the phone call to Barry Farber about 20 years ago, you watch. You watch what happens.
Yeah.
They're going to be telling us what to eat,
what
to wear, how to speak, what to drive. And you only get this from the left, folks. And don't be fooled
by the
noble cause.
Oh, that's always it.
No. The noble cause is for us to live as best a life as we can.
That's right.
And that's the Bible says you will be held accountable for using whatever talents that God gave you.
That's right.
And if we find things in the earth that we can use
to
make our lives easier, God looks upon that as something good. He put them there for that reason.
Well,
you're supposed to use your talents to find these things and make life easier.
Oil is the blood of Mother Earth.
Yeah.
That's why we must
just fall to our knees and honor this black goo.
Yeah, well, that's because that's how they use the Beringians. People don't understand that they've used the Beringians making up these fraudulent, there's a call. Oh, yeah, by the way, if you'd like to call, 718-761-9996, 718-761-9996. 9996. They've used the Beringians for that. But, you know, I didn't get a chance with Webster. And I want to thank our producer extraordinaire, Danuskai, for getting him on. We have the best producer in the business, and he gets the best guests, and that's why we have the best interviews. But I want to read this to you because the point here that he made, and I've made it too. I mean, you have eyes to see. You're going to see it. And that is social engineering. That's the danger. The real danger to us is his plans for social engineering. Just remember that, because you're going to see it in various guises if he gets in. Social engineering. But I'm going to show you social engineering. I'm going to show you the danger. The danger of what's going on with this global warming crap. Okay, now this is from page 237 of 1984 by George Orwell, which was really about Bolshevik Russia under Stalin. And it's about Stalin's Russia, his terror, but in the guise of a fictive work. That's okay. And it did not take place in 1984. The only reason it was called 1984 is that the publisher did not like the title, which originally was The Last Man in Europe. And he wrote the book in 1948 and reversed the last 2 years of that to 1984. Okay? And it comes out where Parsons, who was a, you know, loyal Bolshevik who was doing whatever the government wanted, loved Big Brother, and he's arrested. Okay? And he talks about how he got, why he got arrested, and they're in jail together, Winston Smith and Parsons. And Winston Smith says, "Are you guilty?" And Parsons says, "Of course I'm guilty. Don't you think the party would arrest, you don't think the party would arrest an innocent man, do you?" His frog-like face grew calmer and even took on a sanctimonious expression. "Thought crime is a dreadful thing, old man. It's insidious. It can get a hold of you without even knowing it. Do you know how it got a hold of me? In my sleep, yes, that's a fact. There I was, working away, trying to do my bit. Never knew I had any bad stuff in my mind at all. And then I started talking in my sleep. Do you know what they heard me saying? Down with Big Brother. Yes, that's it. I said that. Said it over and over again. Between you and me, old man, I'm glad they got me before he went any further. Do you know what I'm going to say to them when I go up before the tribunal? Thank you. I'm going to say thank you for saving me before it was too late." Now, this is the kicker. "Who denounced you?" said Winston. "It was my little daughter," said Parsons with a sort of doleful pride. "She listened at the keyhole, heard what I was saying, and nipped off to the patrols the very next day. Pretty smart for a nipper of seven, eh? I don't bear her any grudge for it. In fact, I'm proud of her. Shows I brought her up in the right spirit anyway." So when they wrote about children informing on their parents, it's true. And how do we know it's true? It wasn't just that it was in a work of fiction. It was fact. But remember, thought crime. Hey, you're called a racist. And remember, Martin Luther King said all white people are racist, even if they don't know it. Thought crime. Remember that term, thought crime. But where did that really originate? Well, here's where it originated. In The Forsaken, an American tragedy in Stalin's Russia, not only were Soviet children expected to denounce the enemies of the people, they were also specifically instructed to inform on their parents, their teachers, and their friends. Young pioneers who accepted the new morality eagerly embraced socialist competition. Now, remember, this is true. This is not fiction like 1984. This is where it comes from. This is the nightmare. Socialist competition with awards for those who can inform on the greatest number of quote-unquote enemies. One homeless child of the 1930s, a waif named Voinov, remembered his teacher walking into their classroom one morning with a smile across her face. "Vasilev is the pride of our school," the teacher began. "He sets an example that should be followed. He's only a boy, but prove that he is a responsible citizen of our country with vigilance worthy of a real Bolshevik. Vasilev has revealed and unmasked an enemy of the people. Of course, this is the duty of every Soviet citizen. You're right. But Vasilev did more. He acted like a hero. He conquered family prejudices and denounced his own father. Gee, I wonder where George Orwell found this out. Vasilev sat in the classroom wearing a new suit, his reward for having seeing his father reading the banned works of Trotsky. Wise parents stopped talking when their children came home from school. When both parents were arrested, their children were sent to NKVD orphanages where they learned the consequences of being the sons and daughters of, quote-unquote, enemy of the people. And a future Soviet dissident, who most of you know, Yelena Bana, remembered how her 9-year-old brother innocently accepted the guilt of their father, arrested in 1937. Look at what those enemies of the people are like, he told his sister. Some of them even pretend to be fathers. Yelena Bana's father was shot and her mother sent to the camps. Now remember, folks, this is Bolshevik Russia. Are we there yet? Well, in an article in the New York Times today, pint-sized echo police, making parents proud and sometimes crazy. Sometimes Jennifer Ross feels she cannot make a move at home without inviting the scorn of her daughters, 10-year-old Grace and 7-year-old Eliza.
Oh, boy.
The Acura DMX she drives, a flagrant polluter. The bath at night to help her relax, a wasteful indulgent. The reusable shopping bag she forgot again, tisk, tisk. I have very, very environmentally conscious children, more than so than me. I'm embarrassed to say, said Miss Ross, a social worker in Dobbs Ferry, New York. They're on my case about me getting a hybrid car. They want me to replace all the light bulbs in the house with energy-saving bulbs. Miss Ross's children are part of what experts say is a growing army of quote-unquote eco-kids, steeped in environmentalism at school, in houses of worship, through scouting and even via popular culture, who try to hold their parents accountable at home. In their pride in their children's zeal for all things green, the grown-ups sometimes end up feeling like scofflaws under the watchful eye of the pint-sized eco-police, whose demands grow ever greater and more extensive. They pour over garbage bins in search of errant recyclables.
Oh, brother.
They lobby for solar panels, and in a generational about-face, they turn off lights after their parents leave every empty rooms. Kids have really turned into little conscious sitting in the back seat, said Julia Bovey, a spokeswoman for the National Resources Defense Council, a leading environmental group that recently worked with Nickelodeon on a series of public service announcements and other programming called Big Green Help. One of the fascinating things about our children is they don't separate what you're doing from what you should be doing, Mrs. Bovey said. Here's this information about how we can help the environment, and the kids are not able to rationalize it away the way that adults do. Well, it goes on. But you see, folks,
you're a little brainwashed little Nazis.
The Bolsheviks. Yeah. Bolsheviks.
Yeah. Bolsheviks!
Okay? That's what they are, John. I just read it. Okay? I didn't read about Nazis. I read about Bolsheviks. And that's what they're
doing in our schools. And that's what they're turning them into.
I've said it, folks, and I'll say it to you again and again and again in the words of Mario Cuomo. Those who are not students of history, dear friends, are doomed to become victims of history.
Yeah.
They said it couldn't happen here. It's happening here.
Yeah.
This is the social engineering that they want. What's the next step? My mother used a plastic bag when she went to the supermarket. All right, we'll come and take it. You don't think that? You don't think that? Orwell wrote about it fictionally when people read it. I had heard about it when I was a kid, but as I grew older and I've read more, there it is. Children informed on their parents. They were called good Bolsheviki, and their parents were taken away.
They can't add one and two without a calculator, but they got their eye on what you're doing at home with every little thing. You can't even take a bath without them trying to make you feel guilty. I give them a good kick in the seat of the pants and tell them to get in their room and learn something.
Yeah, but you see, John, you didn't really understand or pay attention, because what did he say in the book? Oh, my little one, she caught me. I'm proud of her. You know
that? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the parents are.
And what are these?
Have been browbeaten too.
And what are these parents? Oh, I'm glad my kid.
Yeah, they act like they're proud of it.
So you see, that's how it spreads. I'm telling you.
Look, every time you turn on it, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Frank. Tell me an advertisement or a time when you haven't turned on the television or the radio where they're talking about, and this will help our planet. Every little thing that's spoken about, something has to be mentioned about being green or helping the planet or cutting back on your carbon footprint. If I hear that statement one more time,
I'll put my footprint up their ass.
I'm going to lock myself inside an institution. Because I can't take this political correctness, and all they do is just repeat it so often that it becomes part of your life, and you fall right into the in lockstep. Well, I'm not falling in lockstep, and I look for opportunities like that to say, "Take a walk. You're not going to brainwash me." And speaking of Cuomo, folks. How about Andrew Cuomo in 1998? These are sound bites that you may not have heard, where he admits that he was the head of housing and urban development under who else? Bill Clinton, another left-wing scum, politically correct, affirmative action, a pro-affirmative action type, and it spread into the housing market. I've got some quotes here where he actually comes out and says that they intimidated certain banks into giving out loans under the guise of helping low-income people. And, of course, he tries to put a spin on it that it was discrimination, and that's why they forced the banks into it. But what he won't tell you is that banks and everybody else should be allowed to discriminate and make decisions based on their own protection. We're going to play four of these sound bites for you. And in the end, he actually comes out and says these were affirmative action loans that he knew would foreclose. He knew it was going to happen. And this is more proof that this was a Democrat scandal. Now, the news guy and I spoke a little earlier in the day, and he was trying to say that, well, you know, there's a lot of greed on Wall Street. A lot of these people in these firms are also at fault. And it's true. There's always some skunks that'll try and take advantage of things. But my contention when I was discussing this with the news guy is that it all started with this Fannie Mae kind of thing that's spread. And maybe if this wasn't the initial groundwork that started this whole thing, there wouldn't have been as many opportunities for these people. They might not have even crossed their mind to do some of these things. Of course, the new guy says, well, look, they would have found something to cheat on. But, you know, we've got to be careful that we don't turn every firm into a dishonest firm and every CEO into a crook. They're not. Or, you know, we wouldn't have survived this long. All right, we'll do that after the break.
And if you want to survive with the right perspective, well, just give us a call at 718-761-9996. After midnight, hello! Oh, be cool.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Motorcycles have had them, and over-the-road truck drivers have used them for years. When daytime running lights were mandated for passenger vehicles in Canada, collisions with oncoming traffic dropped by nearly 30%. DRLs quite simply make your car more visible to opposing traffic. More and more manufacturers are making them standard on new vehicles, and insurance companies are even providing discounts for vehicles equipped with DRLs. Want to cut your risk of head-on collisions by up to 30%? You don't have to buy a new car. You can do it with the flick of your wrist. Just turn on your low beams day or night and be seen on the highway, in rain or fog, and driving out of shadows or sun glare. The minimal cost of a couple of light bulbs and a little extra gas is well worth the extra margin of safety you get by being seen by other drivers under all conditions. Every time you drive a vehicle that's not equipped with daytime running lights, reach for the low beam switch when you start out. DRLs. What a bright idea. This message is a public service on this station.
What kingdom has sent you?
The kingdom of...
(718) 761-9996 Connecticut approved gay marriage.
Yeah, that's another disaster.
The third state following California and Massachusetts. All three were approved by 4-3 votes. All three courts, and that is judicial legislation,
yeah,
bypassing the will of the people and the legislatures. But you know what? If a state has to recognize another state's queer marriage, then they have to recognize the license to carry a firearm from another state. If I have to recognize your marriage and you're two sodomists, then you know what? You have to recognize my right to carry a gun. I'm licensed in that state. That license is just as good in your state. Tit for tat. But, you know, we're headed towards the abyss.
Well, Connecticut lost cause. New Jersey's a lost cause. Massachusetts is a lost cause, and so is New York. The whole Northeast here are really sinking fast. And Michigan isn't far behind, because that's been taken over by the left. Well, California's just as bad as well. So you have certain states in this in our great country, our once great country, that really it may be just a lost cause to even try and run Democrats in those states. And it's really a shame, because this is what the left depends on, these states that are the most populated for the most electoral votes.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to those quotes of Andrew Cuomo. Wait till you hear these folks.
Yeah.
Let me take this phone call.
We got another phone call coming in. Paul in Texas. We'll get to you right after John plays the cuts. So, you know, what I read to you, there it is. There it is. People, this environmentalism, see, they can't, globalism can't work by talking about ideology, the workers, the working class, and the proletariat class, and that's all, you know, that's esoteric to people, and they look at their life, and when they look at their life, they say, well, this is all just arcane gobbledygook. You listen to Marxists, they go into these arcane and convoluted explanation. But if you tell them, do you know, this was one of the hottest summers ever, and the polar caps, do you know the polar caps are not melting? Because it turns out that in the summer, what looks like melted ice sheets is naturally, it's warmer, and the water is covering the ice. Watch ice road truckers as the road starts to melt. That's what goes on. But if you make people afraid that it's going to directly affect them with so-called global, this is a global bogus bullshit story. It's being used. All right, you want to play those clips?
Yeah, well, you hear these folks. This is an out-and-out admission that a lot of these people caused this problem, that other problems stemmed from.
But discrimination isn't always that obvious.
This is Andrew Cuomo, head of housing and urban development under Bill Clinton. He is the son of Mario Cuomo, the governor who nearly destroyed New York City when he was governor for like 12 years here.
But discrimination isn't always that obvious. sometimes more subtle, but in many ways more insidious, an institutionalized discrimination that's hidden behind a smiling face.
Well, I'm going to answer these as he goes along. Look, first of all, discrimination, when it's your money, you have a right to discriminate. And we discriminate every day and every minute of our lives to make decisions on what's good for us. And these lending institutions have a right to discriminate. Because somebody may have a black face doesn't mean that you're just supposed to say yes all the time, because somebody will threaten your livelihood and call you racist. You're supposed to discriminate. And part of the discrimination is making sure that somebody's qualified to borrow money from you. You expect it to get it back. Let's continue.
Housing agents who say, well, there are no vacancies right now, that you just didn't qualify for the mortgage because your financial credit history wasn't good enough. Last year, the Federal Reserve Board found African Americans are denied credit for homes at twice the rate white Americans are.
Yeah, and the reason they were wasn't because they were being racially discriminated against. You notice he doesn't, he just says, he assumes they were being discriminated against because they were a certain color. They were discriminated against, or they were disqualified because they didn't have the qualifications. That is not racial discrimination. And this guy is a socialist too, because what he's really saying is that everyone should be able to have what everyone else has, because otherwise it's not fair. And that is the start of the destruction of the nation.
And it is pervasive. It's what we found in the banking case in Texas, AccuBank in Texas. Discrimination in lending, discrimination in rendering mortgages.
What he calls discrimination is the bank having the nerve to take a look at someone's credit rating and or their job, or if they have a job, or maybe they weren't working on their job long enough, or maybe they weren't making enough money, or maybe they would wind up using too much of their money to pay their mortgage and at the expense of being able to provide for their families. There are qualifications like that. He, being the lefty liberal scum that he is, Andrew Cuomo, calls it discrimination. Well, it's righteous discrimination, okay?
The bank has agreed to change its practices, as you heard from the assistant secretary. The bank has also agreed to a $2.1 billion agreement where they'll make $2.1 billion available to families who are low and moderate income across the country for mortgages. About 15,000 low and moderate income people will now be able to buy their own home because of the settlement we announced today.
Yeah. The agreement? No, the coercion. And it's not a settlement. It was a threat. Let's use the right terminology. The agreement. They were threatened. They'd be called racist if they didn't do it. They were coerced into it. They put a nice... See, this is what the left always does. They put a nice-sounding terminology on it. Affirmative action. Sounds so nice, doesn't it? Something positive. When really all it is discrimination against white people. And that's what the left always does. Agreement. It was a coercion and threats.
But aggressively, to take a greater risk.
Yeah, aggressively. In other words, if you don't do it, we'll call you racist and we'll have boycotts outside your bank. And we'll tell people not to bank there because you're a bunch of racist bigots.
On these mortgages, yes. To give families mortgages who they would not have given otherwise, yes.
Get the loans at all. They wouldn't have...
They would not have qualified but for this affirmative action on the part of the bank, yes.
He's coming right out and saying these people were unqualified. So if he's admitting that these people were unqualified financially, how can he... He just contradicted himself. How could he say it's racism or it's discrimination if he himself now is admitting that they were not qualified financially? We'll play that again.
They would not have given otherwise, yes.
Get the loans at all. They wouldn't have...
They would not have qualified but for this affirmative action on the part of the bank, yes.
Yeah, it's affirmative action. In other words, you're going to get it just because you're black. You're not qualified, but we're going to give it to you. This is the cause of the downfall of this nation, folks. making police, making people police officers when they're unqualified, helping them pass the bar. You're giving them extra points to become firemen or lawyers. And that's the lowering of standards, giving them extra points because they're black, to make them engineers on a subway train. That's why you have these accidents that kill people. Affirmative action is not affirmative. It should be negative action.
With the $2.1 billion lending that amount in mortgages, which will be a higher risk, and I'm sure there'll be a higher default rate on those mortgages than on the rest of the portfolio.
You hear that? He comes right out and says there'll be a higher risk and they'll default. He knew it was going to happen. They'll say, we'll play it again.
It will be a higher risk, and I'm sure there'll be a higher default rate on those mortgages than on the rest of the portfolio.
So how?
But discrimination isn't always that obvious.
Yeah. Well, discrimination in certain cases should be obvious, and you should make that clear to the people who are applying for a loan. You could say, hey, there's a possibility that you're not going to qualify for this, but if you want to try, go ahead. And a bank has the right to do that. It's their money. It isn't Mario Cuomo's money. It isn't Bill Clinton's money. And it isn't the money of these lefty Democrats who are looking to buy the votes of people by giving them something they didn't deserve because they weren't qualified. This audio is astounding. The Republicans should be using this in campaign commercials. Did you hear that, Frank?
Yeah.
With Mario Cuomo?
No, play it again.
Look, I'm not going to play the whole thing.
But discrimination isn't always...
He comes right out at the end and says that he knew that these loans that were given out would default at a greater rate. But he did it. He says the bank should have done it anyway. He says it here.
Action on the part of the bank, yeah. With the $2.1 billion lending that amount in mortgages, which will be a higher risk, and I'm sure there'll be a higher default rate on those mortgages than on the rest of the portfolio.
You're the head of Housing and Urban Development, and you say that people should get loans even if they're unqualified and you know they're going to default? In other words, the people who are loaning this money to these people, they shouldn't have a right to say no if they know they're going to lose money or they're going to have to take over the foreclosed houses? You know, these lending institutions, they don't want to be in the real estate business. They're in the business of lending money and making money in the long run. That's, you know, they do people a favor. They have the money by giving out these everybody wants a home. Well, they provide the money for these people. And they're expected to get a return on it. They're not expected to have the people default so that they have to take over their house and try and sell it at a third of the price just to get rid of it. Because now, all of a sudden, they've been thrust into the real estate market. That's not their business. Thanks to Andrew Cuomo and people like Barney Frank. And I didn't mean to interrupt, Frank. Let me just finish this last story.
Sure.
Those hearings in 2004 on Fannie and Freddie Mae, there was a racial tinge to that. Because you had, who was the head? I think I have it here. The head of Fannie Mae. Not Arthur Davis. It was... Franklin Raines. He was the head of Fannie Mae, the temporary head. And you had Maxine Waters and people like Gregory Meeks who pretended there was nothing wrong with Fannie Mae because they didn't want a black guy to be looked upon as being a failure. They pretended, and Maxine Waters says it in this soundbite, that he's doing a great job, a great leadership. Because Franklin Raines was black, and Maxine Waters didn't want to have to be critical of another a brother, and that's what it came down to. There was race involved. We don't want to have. It's embarrassing if a brother turns out to be a failure. Another brother turns out to be a failure. You can't have that. And this is what she says in this soundbite.
Through nearly a dozen hearings, where frankly we were trying to fix something that wasn't broke. Mr. Chairman, we do not have a crisis at Freddie Mac, and in particular at Fannie Mae, under the outstanding leadership of Mr. Frank Raines. Under the outstanding leadership of Mr. Frank Raines, everything in the 1992 Act has worked just fine. In fact, the VSEs have exceeded their housing goals. What we need to do today is to focus on the regulator, and this must be done in a manner so as not to impede their affordable housing mission.
Yeah, no, we have to focus on the regulator. The regulator was white, and that's why they wanted to focus on the regulator. He was white, and they didn't want this white guy telling this black guy is a failure. Now, they wanted to focus on the regulator? No, you mean put the regulator down. Embarrass him for daring to bring up the fact that there might be a problem with something that was run by these black bigots. And that's what happened. There was race involved. And this guy, Gregory Meeks, who also said there was no problem. This guy is one of the biggest junket guys going. He spent your tax money taking his wife and family all over the world with these junkets under the phony guise of doing something for the people. And that's where your tax money's going. And that's why you should resist every tax increase. But you heard those sound bites from Andrew Cuomo admitting that these were affirmative action loans and he knew there would be defaults. He should be in jail as well.
When did this happen? When did he make this?
1998.
Well.
So, and then you had the hearings on Fannie Mae in 2004. So for 6 years... 6 years this was going on. Actually, it happened back in the Carter administration. This started, and I think one of them, Freddie Mae or Fannie Mae, started under Roosevelt. Actually,
yeah.
So, you know, it's all Democrats, folks. Yeah, there's some skunks on Wall Street. You're going to get no doubt about it. But I always say this is what really started the ball rolling, and the snowball got bigger and bigger as it was going downhill. Sure, there's a lot of blame to go around with some people on Wall Street, unfortunately, if these kind of things, if Fannie and Freddie Mae weren't created in the first place to give people loans that had no business getting the loans, this other stuff wouldn't have developed. And unfortunately, Mike hung up, so maybe that's him back. So let's go to Paul in Texas.
Okay.
And the Republicans should use those sound bites of Andrew Cuomo never-ending commercials or campaign commercials up until November 4th.
Welcome to the Right Perspective, Paul.
Good evening, gentlemen. I got all fired up over listening to all this that's going on here. first comment was when listening to the show earlier was about the gay marriage amendment.
Yeah.
And I had someone ask me what I thought about gay marriage, and my reply was, I don't.
Sure, it's an oxymoron.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. No, I actually don't think about it too much. You know, not my dance.
Hmm.
So then we got into the Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are the other way around, and mm-hmm. it struck me as, you know, these type of government programs always have rather kind of nice. Benign names, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. They sound nice.
Right.
It sounds like they're benevolent and helpful.
Yeah, that's what the left always does.
Yeah, it's a nice sounding thing. I can remember back in the early Clinton administration, I can't think of the fellow's name, he was talking about tax increases as revenue enhancement.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
You put a nice title on it.
Sure. Well, students, look at all these left-wing groups. Students for a Democratic Society. They're a bunch of lefty communists.
That's right.
They don't have enough life experience to understand what true democracy is.
No, of course not.
The old hackneyed phrase about, you know, two wolves and the sheep deciding what's on for dinner, you know, voting what's on for dinner. And It goes on and on and on, and then when it finally catches up to them, everybody's got a solution.
That's right.
And the solution is more of the same.
That's right.
It's confounding that you have these people, and they're having these show trials, which is essentially what they are, in my opinion. And you've got the guys that were in charge of this, and the gals that were in charge of this, and they're all up there teary-eyed and remorseful. And then they're just going to, okay, hearing's over.
Right.
And they walk.
Yeah.
They walk.
That's right.
It's it's extremely frustrating. Going back to the, you know, talking about mortgages, when I bought the property that I'm living at, I had to pony up 20%.
Right.
Yeah, me too.
That was it.
Me too, me too.
You don't have it, you don't get it.
That's right.
The end.
You don't have a right to bankrupt someone because you want something. And no politician has the right to say that because somebody's black and I want your vote, that if necessary, they'll bankrupt a lending institution so that I can get some black or Hispanic person's vote.
Yeah, but when it's a lending institution, okay, when it's a bank, that's not government money, that's private money. So basically, yeah. The government is taking private money, and it's telling you that your private money has got to be used for social engineering through a private industry. Okay.
Well, just this week, they decided that they're going to try to let the government take over for the bank as well as the mortgage industry. Yeah. So if they control the banks and the mortgage industry, you're pretty much bought and sold.
That's right.
If are your papers in order?
Yeah.
That's right.
If not, you can't get a mortgage.
That's right.
You know, who do you work for? Well, you work for the government? Do you work for yourself? Where's the money coming from? Well, it's coming from you. And it's just, and I'm sure this is going to come down the line if they get away with this. If they are they have oversight control of the banks, they have oversight control of private lending, they have oversight control of realty, you will hear them at some point saying, in order to save you money and make this system more efficient, we are going to put this under the umbrella of another organization.
That's right.
And then they're going to tie it all together, and you can't have dinner without approval.
That's right.
Yeah, well.
You can't go to the grocery store.
That's right.
Well, who's the, you know, the government's going to buy up all these mortgages and resell them. Hopefully it won't be in the hands of the government, that they will be able to sell them off into more private industry, because I don't want the government to have control of who gets a mortgage and who doesn't.
I don't believe it. The government had no right to get involved in this anyway, okay? And I don't believe they're going to give you anything back. They're not. They're buying on a promise. It's a promise, John. It's not a reality. It's not something that's tangible. It's a promise that they'll make. John, didn't they promise Social Security was going to be... Social Security was a promise. Look at what happened to it. It was a Ponzi scheme. And that's what this is. This is a Ponzi scheme. Paul, we're going to move along because we're going to leave a little early tonight, right after Hello Africa. So give us a call next week.
Well, you're right. It is a Ponzi scheme. And if they take the money and they're going to buy up these low-cost mortgages, and when the market turns, they're going to give the money back, BS.
Right.
They're going to spend it on new government programs.
That's exactly.
You're not going to see nickel on.
Exactly. Take care.
All right. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
All right,
exactly.
Paul. Exactly. Give us a call. Don't be a stranger.
And let's go to Mike and Beth Page. Welcome to The Right Perspective.
Cheryl, we'll be with you.
Gentlemen, I am turning blue here. I'm turning blue because I'm holding my breath waiting for the FBI to arrest a Democrat for looting Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. I'm holding my breath because I know in my heart of hearts that some security laws must have been breached when it came to Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, AIG, you name it, guys. Something is wrong. Something. There is a stench across the land of lawlessness in the money sectors of our economy. Our country is doomed if this doesn't stop. I'm going to tell you what, guys. Right now, we are in a it is obvious to anybody who even looks that we are in a crash mode. We are going to go into a breakdown of credit and liquidity within the country. This second bailout of AIG was the worst possible omen, and pardon the expression, John, the worst possible omen that one could possibly see, because it means that none of this is even slightly working. Years ago, I said, when I was on your program, that I thought gold would be the best investment over the next 10 years, and that was almost 10 years ago right now, and I still think it will be for the next 10 years. The stock market is great if you pick the right stocks. Pretty soon, you're going to get a relief rally come out of this. it's almost inevitable, but it will be in gold stocks, commodity stocks, food stocks, and water stocks. Water, oil, and food, because it's obvious they're not making any more of the stuff, and we're going to need it, especially with Barack Hussein Obama, very likely to be the next, he's not the president of my country. Another thing That's I right. did, gentlemen, publicly on your program was I seceded from the Union years ago, and I ask you this night that if you could play my beloved national anthem, Dixie, because this is now a North American entity, as Frank calls it. It is not the United States of America anymore. The Republic is over. In fact, it ended when Ronald Reagan was walking down the steps of the Capitol to get into the helicopter to leave. We have not had a country since.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid you're right, because when I heard George Bush that time say, I want a kinder, gentler nation.
That was his. That was sort of like the secret handshake, John. It was like the secret handshake among the Freemasons of the Skull and Bone Society. There was the secret handshake being proclaimed right on the steps of the Capitol. That it's over, boys. This inconvenience of a republic is over. We rule now. And isn't it obvious? This is like barbarians who have looted our villages, plundered our goods, and ravished our women. This is horrifying what we're seeing before us. They are tyrannizing us to pay for their politically correct cronies. And the politically correct cronies are the chieftains and titans of Wall Street and the illegal alien invaders who have 5 million, gentlemen.
Imagine that.
5 million delinquent mortgages belong to illegal aliens. And we're paying for it, you and I.
I know, it's unbelievable.
And that's tyranny. Is this not the essence of tyranny? Sure. What else could be the essence of tyranny? And may I remind that scum, Joe Biden, that this country was founded by men, real men, who threw tea overboard in Boston Harbor and gave the finger to the King of England because they wouldn't pay a tax. Well, it's going to come time for Americans are going to start giving the finger to the government. There's going to be lawlessness across the land. I do not advocate lawlessness, but it's obvious that lawlessness will prevail across the land because there is lawlessness in Congress. There is lawlessness in Albany. There is lawlessness in Sacramento. There is lawlessness in every state capital across the Union. They are pillaging us.
That's right. All right, Mike, we want to thank you, Patriot Mike. And you've been very prophetic in what you've been saying. And history has unfortunately borne your brilliance out. Good night.
Right.
All right. All right, Mike.
We're going to go to Cheryl. And
very passionate.
And then hello, Africa, with Manette Leslie Folster to speak about the collapse of the ANC. There's a coming civil war. I predicted that. I knew it would happen. I'll be explaining to Leslie Folster why. He's not calling from Transvaal province, but from the Orange Free State, which is a stronghold of Boervolk. And he's a young Boer who's been on the program. He was supposed to come in November. We were really looking forward to meeting him, but there's been a change of plans. Well, you know, coming in from South Africa is not just like coming in, you know, I mean.
I'll say.
You know, so. But he'll be on to discuss this. The situation is gotten very bad between Dibontu. Let's go to Cheryl right before. Well, we'll go to Cheryl right after the 12 o'clock break, and we're gonna wrap it up after Leslie Forster. John got to get up early tomorrow, so we can't.
We won't be playing a best of John and Frank tonight. I'll be setting that up for tomorrow when I get home because I have to go to classes tomorrow. And no, it'll be Sunday morning, actually. I'll be
I would have known I would have brought down a tape from 2001 and some of the great callers we had. Remember Roger, who always talked about the One World of Burgers?
Yeah.
Ralph from the Philippines.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have been able to play anything anyway because I'm just going to close everything down and hit the hay.
But listening to that tape, you know, some brings back some of the people that used to call the show eight years ago. Roger always would talk about the One World of Burgers, and Ralph from the Philippines, who used to call the program, had some really really great callers who used to. But I think once we lost the 800 number, a lot of these people. Remember Ron from Queens? One more thing. Gave the guy one night almost 45 minutes. And at the end, and every time I'd say goodnight, you know, goodbye, Ron, he'd keep on talking over me. And then finally got through. I said, good night. One more thing. You're on 45 goddamn minutes. And one more thing. You know, he apparently thought, you know. And you know what he says on the tape that's a riot? Well, you know, they're listening and, you know, they steal what you guys say. And you know what I say? What he said. You know what his big line was that they were going to, that was going to be stolen and used by other talk show hosts? Whirling dervishes of deceit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this? That was his big line. Now let's go to Cheryl.
How about this? Right. Whirling dervishes.
All right, let's go to the next president of the United States, America's first female president, the Right Perspective candidate, Cheryl of New Jersey. Welcome, Cheryl.
Cheryl, and I am the Right Perspective official candidate for president of the United States of America. And I told John I am not going to get that little black box for the television. They want you to get by February to get high definition. You're supposed to buy a flat screen TV, stick a dish on top of your house, and forget about your antennas. What they're putting on TV isn't even worth watching. I'm not looking to even get that little black box. The news tells you, oh, Sarah Palin, she did something wrong. Oh, they came up with a report. This is such malarkey. All of the TV stations are in the tank for Obama. They don't come out and say that Louis Farrakhan gave him such an endorsement, put him up on a pedestal. You would think he was a religious figure the way Farrakhan was talking about him. They don't even mention about ACORN, the Association of Community Organizers. You know that they are in all 57 states. They have offices all over. Here in New Jersey, the garbage state, they have an office in Jersey City. How do they pay the rent up there in Jersey City? Jersey City, it's expensive rent. They're in Newark, I can understand that. Patterson, they're in Trenton. They are all over the place, and they are looking to register ex-convicts who have done parole and who have done their probation. They're such worthy members of the community. What new positions they have, I don't know. But ACORN is all over the place. And the TV doesn't even mention them. They don't even come up with one negative word about abominable. The fellow you had on, Webster, he did a marvelous job. He was a terrific interview, and he was talking the truth about this abominable, yes. Barry Abominable, and how anybody could think of voting for him is absolutely out of the question. They had Gwen Awful, they had Tom Brokaw, and now it's going to be Bob Shifty who's going to be the moderator. All of them are in the tank for this abomination, and it's absolutely awful. I don't want to keep you because you have to do Africa.
No, we got it in a few minutes.
I will be calling you again. Got to go out on the campaign trail. I am the official candidate from the Right Perspective.
Yeah.
All right, Cheryl.
Good night now. Good night.
All right, Cheryl. And now Cheryl would be better than either one of these two. And for Mike from Bethpage, this is for you. Thank you. All right, and that's the New American Band.
Yes.
Great version. We have a little bit more, but we want to get to a couple of other things. And
now, you know, when he was talking about you know where affirmative action really had its start? Affirmative action had its start in Europe, and it was used against Jews. Now, I'm reading a really great book, Rising 44, The Battle for Warsaw, about how the Polish Home Army, it's not about the Warsaw Uprising, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. This is about when Warsaw broke out against the Nazis and when the Soviet troops, because the Home Army saw the Nazis fleeing the Red Army, it was time for what they call the Rising. And the Varsovians, that's what we call the Warsawians, the Varsovians was the original name, saw this as an opportunity to strike back at the Nazis. Well, the Red Army didn't want a Poland that wasn't controlled by Stalin. Oh, somebody's calling in. So what did they do? They stopped. The Red Army stopped on the banks of the Vistula and did nothing. They didn't come to aid the Home Army. And once the Nazis saw that, they turned and obliterated, and I mean obliterated, Poland. And it's just an incredibly wonderful book. Well, what happened is, he says that Jews, though around 10% of the overall population, accounted for a markedly higher percentage of the student body. In the University of Warsaw, they represented a dominant element of the law and medical faculties. As a result, in certain places and in different times, as in comparable places in Britain and America, and this is the key where affirmative action comes from, the Latin phrase, numerus clausus was introduced. Serious objection is raised by Jewish leaders to this numerus clausus, and one can understand why. But not to introduce it would create worse trouble. Young men would be admitted to studies from which they would not have the slightest chance of getting a living. Now, that was printed in Poland. There can be no doubt that a degree of discrimination was involved, but the policies advocates, and here's a key, like the advocates of women's advancement, saw it as a necessary, get this, John, form of quote-unquote positive discrimination. See, so don't think that this has its roots just here. Okay, this was done to Jews in Poland because they felt that nobody else, you know, they were too smart. They were dominating it because they were too smart. But because Poland had a peasant population that was moving to the cities, they had to open up opportunities for them, so they limited the number of Jews. Just as today, white men are limited in our universities. Men's sports programs, it's called affirmative action, but it's really discrimination. But what did they do? Here you go back to the 1930s and the 20s and 30s in Poland. It was called positive discrimination. All right, we have
positive discrimination.
Right? Okay. We got that ready to play?
Yep.
Can we play this last clip as we, you know, for like number 18? We're going to get our good friend Dr. Letts Pretorius on, and he's going to answer the lies about him. But as George the Atheist knows, when I said, South Africa's present is our future, and if this son of a bitch gets in, folks, the future will be now. Believe me. So we're going to go close out with the best song from the album, Oh Brother, Where Am I? Oh,
you
no, no, 18.
To go.
That is 18.
To the Lord's
wait. Oh, I'm sorry. 16 then. I'm sorry. Keep them guessing. Here we go. A Man of Constant Sorrow. I love this.
Trouble all my day.
I was born and raised. The place where he was born and raised.
I'll meet you on God's golden shore.